Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. David is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of financial experience. And because he actually provides advice to clients on a daily basis, our hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory Services and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. Commentary given during this radio program is usually pretty smart, but should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities should not be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual's situation. Only if you hire David and his firm to help you, and only available where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Here he is, David Holland.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So, I've got an outstanding guest lined up for you today. Me. Hi. I've got some things I've been wanting to get to talk to you about. And, you know, I stack things up, and I'm like, I want to talk about that on the show. It's really interesting, or it's very relevant. And then I get people that want to be guests. So sometimes I have to choose, you know, and I've been getting, I hope you agree, a lot of very interesting guests lately. So guests take priority. You know, what can I say? I take that opportunity when somebody wants to be on and come on and share with you. So, but here are some things recently that caught my eye that I wanted to share with you myself. Congressman reintroduces bill to exempt Olympic medals from taxes. How about that? This is the middle of February of 2014, and Representative Blake Farenthold of Texas, a Republican, reintroduced legislation to provide tax exemptions to American athletes who win medals in the Olympics. Now, what's first striking me about that is, do we really have to do that? Are you kidding me? This is not already in place. I mean, this is like passing a law to say that there's gravity and it pulls you to the center of the earth. But anyway, with our convoluted tax code in the United States, that this has to be put through, the reason it would exempt U.S. Olympic athletes from paying taxes as much as $9,000 on their medals and awards they win while competing on behalf of our country, the United States, in the Olympics. So these medals, I guess, can be rather expensive and have a fair market value, of course, especially if you look beyond just the value of the medal itself, but what it represents as a collector's item. I mean, if you're going to tax them, IRS, look at what that would go for on eBay. Boy, now they'd have to sell, if they win two medals, they have to sell one just to pay the tax on the one. Silly stuff, isn't it, ladies and gentlemen? Anyway, I saw that, and I, of course, hope that that passes in a, how many members of Congress are there? 450-something. I would hope that that would pass with a 100% margin. All right, so that's anyway. I guess that's from the crazy department. A couple of other things that I thought were really interesting. Well, let me get to this one first, and then we'll go to the IRS, speaking of crazy. Gambling ringleader gets 6 years prison sentence. Allied Veterans of America, ready for this? An attorney's been convicted. This is in Florida here in Sanford, which is just a little west of where I am. An attorney convicted of leading a $300 million gambling ring that used veterans' charity as a front was sentenced to 6 years in prison. This is reported in the Daytona Beach News Journal. So this attorney, let's see what happened. So there was a statewide prosecution. He was convicted of 103 counts of racketeering, possessing slot machines, and other charges. There's an appeal going on, and the guy's name is Kelly Mathis, and he, again, an attorney. And so he's the first of 57 defendants to go on trial in this case. So this is a pretty big deal. But the thing that really struck me about this, which obviously we hope that justice is well served if he is guilty, is he and his associates built up a network of casinos by claiming that they were businesses where the customers could buy internet time, when in reality the customers played slot machines. And even though the internet cafes were being used under the underneath the, what they call this Allied Veterans of the, let's see where it is, of the world, very little of the $300 million the business earned actually went to veterans, according to prosecutors. So, you know, the bottom line here, I guess my message to you is that be very careful about, and this is one of the things that I'm going to get to about the IRS, that you have to be really careful anytime there is a charity on the other end of something. And, you know, you just have to be careful. The IRS, on that point, issued their Dirty Dozen Tax Scams for 2014. And it's a pretty good list. I thought I would share it with you. And I got this. Where did I get this from? I think it was off of one of the CPA resources I subscribe to. The Internal Revenue Service has released this Dirty Dozen list of tax scams, cautioning taxpayers to protect themselves against a wide range of schemes, ranging from identity theft to tax return preparer fraud this tax season. So number one on their list is identity theft, which is on many people's list. Tax fraud through the use of identity theft tops the list. That's when somebody else uses your personal information, your name, social security number, other identifying information without your permission to commit fraud or other crimes. And sometimes, of course, that also includes filing your tax return fraudulently and getting the refund. So file early if you can. Don't wait till the last minute because somebody else might file for you. Get that? Okay. So be careful there. Protect your identity. If you don't have an identity theft protection plan, I strongly recommend you get one. If you don't have one, call my office, and I've got one that we've worked with that I have for myself. And it's great because it alerts me every time there's something with my credit file. And that is a great tool. I get an email and it tells me, and I go in and check, and I know what has happened. Oh yeah, I paid that off. You satisfy a loan, or if you open a loan, or you'll get notified. So just, you've got to watch that very carefully. Other area of concern for the IRS is pervasive telephone scams, not just involving the IRS, but there are a lot of things that go into this. And the characteristics of these scams are pretty consistent. The scammer uses a fake name, a fake IRS badge number. They'll use a lot of common names or surnames to identify themselves. They may be able to give you the last four digit of your social security number. You know that we, in our society, that's not an uncommonly used password or identifying information. Your mother's maiden name, that's not unusual. Mother's date of birth, not unusual. These are things that you have to be careful to guard, but don't be surprised if the scammers got some of your information. They can make the caller ID look like it's from the IRS or it's from something that looks official. Doesn't matter if it says American Express or whatever. You can't trust that call is coming from where the caller ID says it's coming from. The latest thing I've seen on my phone is instead of a number or instead of it being a name, the latest thing I've seen, it just says incoming call. That's the new thing now. It doesn't have a caller ID. And then it's somebody calling. It sounds like the call is very disconnected, like they're calling from another country, and I just hang up. I don't even listen to it. The scammers sometimes will also send along an email simultaneously or right before calling to improve the legitimacy or perception of it being a real phone call. If they can get some of this other information I mentioned a minute ago, you think they might have your email address? Sure. That you also might hear background noise. They like to make it sound like that's a call center. So these are all things that the IRS has to be careful. Of course, speaking of email, there's an ongoing problem with phishing. If it doesn't look right, don't respond. Never click on anything in an email that says click here to verify or validate. And if it looks like it's from American Express, or it looks like it's from a credit card, or it looks like it's from your home mortgage or from a bank, you delete the email, and then you call them or go to their website, go in through your secure to see if there's something that you really need to know. I get these sometimes where people have had their email accounts, because I have clients, and some of them sometimes, probably at least once every 6 months or so, we get a client who has had their email hacked into somehow out there in the world. And then I get an email to me that looks like it's from that client. And I'm always very careful when I open those. And my technology director, Lisa here, who runs our radio board, can tell you I call her over and say, Lisa, come look at this email because it looks fishy to me. And she'll open it up in a special quarantine thing that she has that kind of isolates it so it doesn't affect us. And, you know, it's kind of like when they take the bombs off somewhere and they blow them up in a special place. That's what Lisa does with these emails. And it's all junk. It's all either a virus or it's somebody trying to get information. So phishing is another one to be very careful of. Don't don't do it, right? All right. Well, let's take a break here, and I'll come back with some of the other warnings, false promises, tax return fraud, impersonation of charitable organizations. We'll get to all those right after this quick break.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
And welcome back. I'm continuing my report to you, and it's from Accounting Today. That's one of the CPA publications I subscribe to. IRS warns of its dirty dozen for tax scams of 2014. False promises of free money from inflated refunds. Some con artists out there, they will pose as tax preparers during tax time. They lure their victims in with promises of large federal tax refunds that the people never even dreamed they were going to get or were due in the first place. They use flyers, advertisements, phony storefronts, even word of mouth to throw a very wide net. They also like to do this through community groups, churches, things like that, where trust is high. And they prey on people that usually don't have a filing requirement, low-income individuals, elderly. They also like to prey on non-English-speaking people who may or may not have a filing requirement. And what they do is they build up false hope for people making a claim and going to pursue a fictitious rebate or other tax credits or benefits. And the problem, of course, is they charge good money for some very bad advice, or worse, they'll file the false return. And in fact, that brings me to, kind of as a side note, IRS employee charged with tax fraud and identity theft reported out of Philadelphia. The Internal Revenue Service says that Sherelle Pratt, of 49, of Philadelphia, was charged by an indictment with filing false returns, aiding and assisting other individuals in preparing and filing false returns, theft of government property, and aggravated identity theft, according to the U.S. prosecuting attorney. So this went on from 2006 through 2008, stole $29,000 in tax refunds. She's facing 33 years in prison and a fine of up to $2.25 million. They'll never see that money, will they? So this was recent. So there's kind of a anecdotal, a little example of this going on with, it's not just scammers out there, even within what you would hope to be a trusted organization like the IRS, charged with an incredible level of responsibility. You would hope that they would find the best people they can and vet them thoroughly, but I guess that's not always the case. That's the deal with the filing of tax returns and free money promises. I, of course, just talked about the tax return preparer fraud. That's next on the list. Impersonation of charitable organizations. We spoke about that with the ringleader I told you about earlier. And, you know, I hate to be such a cynic and skeptical, but anything you get on the phone, so somebody calls up and they want money from you. Are you really going to give them your credit card? I mean, let's back this up. Somebody calls, how would you get them the money? They're going to want it right over the phone right then. They're not going to want you to send it or whatever. So the question isn't, do you want to give the charity? Are you really going to give somebody your credit card that called you over the phone to give to, I don't care what the organization. I don't care if it's a reputable organization. I don't care if it's somebody that you really believe in and that you know it's them. Why wouldn't you initiate the call? Why wouldn't you reach out through their website? A lot of the prominent, well-respected charities will let you do a contribution right over the internet on their website. So don't do any of that. Just don't do it. What else do I have? Yeah, the rest of it just kind of goes on and on about just other things that people try to get through the IRS and filing false claims and other stuff. Here's a funny story, not funny for the person, but I guess interesting and kind of ironic with the IRS. It's actually two stories I'll give you. I've got both of them. One is on one hand, the IRS just released a new policy change that you can't call them and get them to tell you what to do with your taxes. How about that? So they're just there to collect your money and to enforce and go after you if you don't give them your money, and to audit you. But they're not going to get you. Call them and say, "Yeah, I have a question about this this tax issue. Should I report it this way or this way?" They won't. They're not going to do that anymore. So they'll collect it, but they won't, and they'll just direct you to a publication. Well, go on our website, or go to this form number, or go to this publication, and you know, read it, and you figure it out. Is basically the craziness of where we are today. How do you collect tax from somebody when you can't even tell them how to calculate the tax? That's where we are, ladies and gentlemen. Another interesting story from Accounting Today. Taxpayer scores $862,000 from the IRS after tripping over a phone cord. That's some justice there. So a taxpayer undergoing an audit after an Internal Revenue Service office in Long Island. So taxpayers getting audited and Long Island sued the IRS for $862,000 after he tripped over a phone cord. William Barover claimed in the lawsuit he could no longer play golf and perform other activities, and after he fell during a 2000 audit by the IRS in New York, according to the New York Post. He had visited the office to work out a payment arrangement for a $60,000 tax bill when he tripped over the phone cord and fell against a cabinet. After leaving the office, he called the IRS from the parking lot and said he'd lost some sense of feeling in his leg and suffered some shoulder pain. He spent 17 days in hospitals and rehab centers from the injury. And of course, the IRS claimed that he exaggerated his injury, but a judge awarded him $862,000 for pain and suffering. He was denied the full $10 million he was seeking. So I don't know. Is that justice? I'll let you decide that one. That is very curious to me. All right, let's grab another quick break, and I'm going to come back and share some other things I've seen lately. Stay right there.
Many people invest without ever knowing what they pay in investment fees. When was the last time you dropped your car off for service and told them to fix whatever they want without getting an estimate first? I'll bet never. Why treat your portfolio any different? Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
And we are back. Okay, so one of the things that's debated often in financial circles that does affect the advice you receive about your money is there's an ongoing debate about how to get income during retirement. And what I mean by that, I'm not talking about specific products or investments. What I'm talking about, which that's a whole other debate. But what I'm talking about is what is sometimes called a quote-unquote safe or sustainable withdrawal rate from your assets. And this has been debated for some time, but there were some studies done, and there's been ongoing studies done, and the discussion or intellectual argument is over what's a rate you can draw from your investments that will see you through to the end. And of course, we don't know how long we're going to live, and we don't necessarily, it's possible, but often we don't know how much we're going to earn. So there's some moving parts, and it's difficult to solve an equation when you have multiple variables, right? I mean, I'm doing math with my kids in the evening, and I have three of them, so you know I get to do different levels of math, and so one of the ones that we're dealing with right now is solving for x or solving for n. So we can do that. You know, we've got a little formula: n plus 2 equals 6. What's n? Okay, well that's hard. Ready? 4. But if I've got, and so we're doing this and we're learning it. Okay, but if we've got n plus z plus w plus k equals 5 plus P plus R plus T, I can't solve that. I can't tell you what all those variables are. So when you have more than one variable, it gets very difficult. And that's what we have with trying to plan retirement income and to make sure that you don't run out. Because when you retire, and I heard this by a well-respected career, big contributor to the financial industry, Nick Murray, the other day when I was at a conference. And he said, when you retire, all the financial decisions really consolidate or coalesce or distill down into one question. When you retire, or in retirement, if you're already there, Will you outlive your money or will your money outlive you? And that's excellent, Mr. Nick Murray. So the debate and discussion is how to make sure that you don't outlive your money. And of course, you know, so there are a lot of assumptions that may need to be made, but the debate rages over what's a safe percentage if you're going to take what we call a drawdown approach. And so for a while, there were people that argued that you could take 4 to 6% a year safely, no problem, and you could always draw enough, you would draw money out and your investments would make enough money over time, maybe not every year, but make enough money over time that would sustain you, no matter how long you lived. Well, 2000 through 2009 took that process and stood it on the head for many people. And I've talked on the show previously about examples of this and examples that are in my book of people trying to do that very thing. And it is awfully dangerous to try to pull money from a portfolio that's invested in the market because you'll run out. I've got a whole chapter devoted to this called Dollar Cost Ravaging. Only works in the movies in my book. It works when you're putting money in, but when you're taking it out, it doesn't work so well. And I call it dollar cost ravaging because it can ravage your portfolio. So the debate has been about what's a safe percentage, and it is not necessarily safe to try to do 4 to 6, especially 6, because you don't always get those pretty returns, right? You get those negative ones like we've seen in the past that can be rather substantial, and it's hard to stick to your guns when your portfolio is it's imploding. So the debate continues is my message for you today. And there is no 100% correct answer out there of saying if you draw this percentage, it's always going to work. Now, of course, we could be a little bit absurd and say, well, but what if I took 1% out every year? Well, okay, you really got a good chance to make it, but that's not really realistic, except for the most extreme situations of lack of a need for income or extreme amount of money to work with. So be careful is the other thing I would say when you try to draw from a portfolio and have that sustain you. Be very careful drawing from a portfolio that is invested in things that can fluctuate. I've seen people get crushed. Okay. I can't overemphasize this. If you're retiring, already retired, you're planning your retirement, you're looking to take some required minimum distributions, you're getting into your late 60s, you know that's coming at 70 and a half. Be thinking about how your money's invested, and because what you don't want to do is have to pull from something that's going up and down. So you're going to want to look to have less volatility, less up and down from the things that you're going to draw on versus the things that you're going to let cook for a while. And so I favor, if you come in and see me, I can tell you what you're going to hear. I favor drawing from the stable, conservative, principal protected accounts, things that are going to hold their value and not be subject to rapid decline in a falling market, being able to draw from those. And then I like the idea of coupling that for long-term inflation-fighting growth, a hedge against inflation. I like coupling that with a longer-term growth strategy. And to throw even one more thing in the mix, we need to be careful right now with bonds serving in that protected or more conservative piece of the pie. You can use bonds, but I will caution you with where the treasuries have been and the expectations for Federal Reserve policy change and evolution and the potential for interest rates to go up. Be careful with loading up on long-term bonds. Hug the rails and go to more shorter-term, maybe short-term bond funds if you're going to use mutual funds. Okay, that's all the time I have. Be sure to tune in next time.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.